This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Friday, October 17th, 2008. I'm Caleb Brown. With close presidential elections making recent history, the push is on for the national popular vote to decide future presidential elections. John Samples, director of the Cato Institute's Center for Representative Government, says there are a host of benefits to keeping our system of electoral federalism relatively as is. Samples' new analysis, A Critique of the National Popular Vote, is available at cato.org.
The original idea about the Electoral College was to create an institution that, you know, was acceptable to the delegates at the Constitutional Convention. And what they came up with, they considered direct election along with election by Congress. Both of them were thought to have, really bad shortcomings. So they came up with a kind of deliberative, indirect way that was state-based, in which states would have the right to select electors who in turn would choose a presidential candidate from that state. So we don't have that system now. I mean, right now when the electors meet in December in the various state capitals, they won't deliberate. They will be pledged. And almost all of them, if history's any guide, will vote for the person who won the state, right? So that's a different system. It came about for a variety of reasons. One was that the development of political parties was not fully foreseen at the founding. And political parties changed the nature of that. As they became more national, they turned the state-based and more independent kind of system into one where the party unity across the states mattered. From the 1820s, 1830s, you're really looking at a party-driven process and one governed by the unit rule at the state level, where whoever won the state won all the electoral votes. And then since then, we've had also other aspects of federalism have given way too. But the Electoral College is a good example of a federal institution becoming more national while retaining a few federal elements now.
Just looking at this as a partisan issue, It would seem that Democrats would look at this and go, yes, this is great, not only because of the sort of egalitarian sort of view that your vote in Idaho or North Dakota or South Dakota should count just as much as a vote in the District of Columbia when it comes time to elect a president. But there's also the more real politic implication, which is that people in cities would matter relatively more, would they not?
Well, that's always been the view. And I think, and there is a partisan divide on this issue about the Electoral College. It's a partisan divide that goes back 30 or 40 years, at least, as long as I can remember anything about politics. And it's just the one you've said, that Democrats want direct election because they thought urban areas got the short shrift, that rural areas were overvalued, and therefore that the Republicans benefited because they were stronger in those areas. I frankly don't think there's a lot to that story. I've looked at who would be affected by a change and how the parties would be affected by changes from the Electoral College to direct election. And these days, I don't get a lot of statistical reasons to think that there's a big advantage for the Democratic Party in doing so. Now, I do think it does accord better with the ideas of progressivism, which are often represented by the Democratic Party. That is, this notion that one nation rather than a nation of states, direct election rather than a more federal system, those are closer. But in terms of partisanship and whether you'll see a stronger position for Democratic candidates, I think the evidence is not good on that.
This issue of turnout, obviously the general opinion of libertarians is pretty well established on the importance or relative or unimportance of voter turnout. Mm-hmm. But this seems to dovetail quite nicely with people who want to see higher voter turnout, reduce disenfranchisement of groups of voters?
Well, I think those are different issues. The questions about disenfranchisement that are raised are really different in the Electoral College context than increased turnout. The idea of increased turnout is the way things work now because of the unit rule, which is, by the way, the unit rule itself is chosen by states. It's not part of the presidential scheme necessarily. It just happens that they all choose that. It has the point where if you are a safe state and if you lean, what the state leans one way or the other in terms of partisanship, the incentives for turnout for people who are not going to win are pretty low. Like, for example, in the District of Columbia, just to choose one example, it's a strong Democratic state, and turnout, Republican voters such as exist in the district really don't have a lot of incentive because it's not going to affect the results. And this idea is spread widely. The idea of direct election is every vote would still contribute to your candidate's ultimate result. And so even if you lost the state, it would make sense to turn out. And also the idea is carried further, and it said, state officials would have reasons for everybody to turn out and try to foster participation, because the more votes of either party that they ultimately contributed to the candidate who won, the more that candidate would appreciate the state. So the incentives... Now, there's a couple of things about that. I mean, it's not a crazy argument or anything like that, but there's a couple of things you can say about it. It's not clear that actually moving to direct election would have that big of an effect. People who are already, aware of what the Electoral College is, aware of political factors and so on, are already likely voting. The people who don't vote have low awareness and low interest and so on. And whether anything states could do or just the sheer change to direct election would make the vote matter differently in a way that would bring them out. Political scientists differ on this, but many think it's pretty unlikely. The other question, though, is that's assumed is that we should try to increase participation. And I know many people by this point have read Brian Kaplan's new book on American voters, and draws in a long line of 50 years of data talking about voters and what kind of contribution, how much information they have, and the incentives and so on. At the margins, it's do you improve the outcome? Do you bring more and better information to bear on the outcome by increasing participation? The answer seems to be no, that you don't, particularly in economic matters.
Everybody remembers the 2000 election and the disputed state of Florida. What implications does this type of national initiative for direct election of a president have on the ability to contain these types of disputes within local areas?
Well, you can go back to 2000 and, sort of compare in a sense. In Florida, of course, we essentially had a tie election. And then we had a long-running dispute. But it was in Florida. It was the focus, and it happened to be the one that determined the election. Had we had a direct election and everything been the same, which it's not clear it would have been, but if it were, you would have had a much more widespread disputes. Remember, the difference between these candidates on the popular side, Gore won by essentially a 500,000 votes, which was well under 1% of all the votes cast. Again, the entire national election was essentially a tie, given the level of errors and so on in measuring it. So what would have happened is in states like New Mexico or other states that were reasonably close on election day, you would have also had attempts at recounts. You would have had the kind of partisan struggles we saw, except it would be much more widespread than in just one state. So when you have that kind of what seems to be about every century a debacle or so, or over a century, it had been a long time since we had anything like 2000, the Electoral College acts to constrain it in a time when we're a 50-50 country, roughly speaking. That seems like a virtue, not a vice.
Well, what reforms are reasonable for the Electoral College system if we don't have the system that was originally created?
Well, the current system, I think, does have some risks. The risks are not as high, perhaps, as people think. For example, the question, but they could have sensible reforms, the question of the rogue elector, the elector who votes for a candidate other than the one they're supposed to. Now a state votes for, and electors are appointed, and they're supposed to vote for whichever candidate won the state. In some cases, that doesn't happen. In a very small number of cases, it hasn't made any difference to the outcome of the election, but it could. And you don't want one elector on their own judgment deciding who wins the presidential election. My friend Bob Bennett has outlined some changes that could be made to bind electors tightly to the results in their state. And I think those make sense. It gives trust in the system. And we don't want someone, one elector, for whatever reason, or a few electors, deciding to change the election results.
John Samples is director of the Cato Institute's Center for Representative Government. His new analysis, A Critique of the National Popular Vote, is available at cato.org.